You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for Sunday, October 31st, 2010. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit Podcast. Today we are talking with the guys from the net label Headphonica at headphonica.com. Martin, Tommy, and Clemens. They're based out in Germany, and we interviewed them. Well, I didn't interview them because, sadly, I messed up the date that we were doing this. So Doug was on his own. So here's Doug interviewing the guys from Headphonica.
All three of you guys are in Germany, right?
Yeah.
Are you in the same part of Germany, or are you spread out a little bit?
It's somewhere in Eastern Germany, south, maybe 200 kilometers south of Berlin.
Tommy and me, we are sitting here in Weimar, in one room. And Martin is living in Halle. So that's about 100 kilometers, maybe. I don't know.
So how did you guys meet and get the Headphonica project kicked off?
Well, I think in the beginning it was Tommy and me and some other guys, which are not there today, or which are not managing the label today, but we still have contacts to them. And one of them was Marian Reinig, who was also doing some artwork for a label. And that was in 2006, I think.
I think it was much earlier. I think it was 2004, 2005. And the first releases started in 2006.
Yeah, you're right.
You had ongoing projects in 2000, maybe even 2003. I don't know, the first fade in, fade outs. When was this? Maybe 2003?
I'm not sure. I don't think that the time span is that wide. I think 2006 is okay. So first there was a kind of compilation idea which was called Headphonica, because people who took part, they could use headphones as microphones, and that was the original idea of Headphonica. So it was not meant to be a net label in the beginning. This is Martin's part, I think, to...
I joined this group when they already produced this compilation, Headphonica, and were seeking for grants to set it up, to bring it on somewhere. They had manufactured maybe 80 or 100 CDRs packed in... it was a very interesting packaging. I still have a copy here somewhere. They were discussing what to do with it. And I joined this discussion, and somehow it came to the point that all of them realized, or maybe we realized, it would be a good idea to put it online for free. And it just turned out that archive.org has this option to store the music for free. And at that time, that was in somewhere in summer 2006, we realized this Creative Commons license, which protects the rights of music which is released for free, and discussed all this, and out of this came Headphonica somehow. I have been in contact with a few musicians from elsewhere before already, and decided to ask them to bring out their music. This was Mr. and Mrs. Brian, who had 7 or 8 releases on Headphonica right now. And I've been in contact with them before, and yes, somehow this all came out as a net label.
Now, in 2006, did they already have a German version of the Creative Commons, or do they even now? I know that it's been ported to some other legal systems, but I don't know where all.
They had a translation of Creative Commons, and we started using this German version in the beginning, but as we came in contact with this artist from elsewhere, we decided to use the unported version, just not to be bound to German rights system.
So I don't know how much you guys know about U.S. law, but I'm it's likely that you know more about U.S. law than I know about German law. So I was just wondering if you knew anything about the differences, or even some of the differences, because I don't know much about the unported license.
I'm not really sure. The unported license is just the pure Creative Commons license, and it's not bound to any local justification or rights system, whatever.
So it's the American one, since it was written by Americans.
yes, it is.
that's what I'd imagine.
But there is a special U.S. portation for this, isn't it?
I don't know. There's so many different, and there's the different versions as well. So it may be that just the standard ones are the U.S. and the unported is separate. I haven't come across one, that says, dash U.S. or dot U.S., but...
I remember when choosing the license, when we upload it to archive.org, we always have to choose the license, and it's possible to leave it unported, and then it's possible to choose the country. There are many countries which it is ported to, and one of these countries is the United States. So I don't know if there's a special version for the United States. I don't know. I haven't read it.
Maybe there's an even more special American version.
Yeah. Is there a public domain in Germany? This is a little bit separate question, but that's one that often comes up in sort of the Creative Commons discussions, is works of public domain. Is that something that exists in Germany? Or do you even know what I'm talking about?
Copyrights in Germany work a little bit different than in America. It's impossible in Germany to sell copyrights. It is possible to sell reproduction rights and things like that, but there are copyrights that are not sellable. These are mostly moral rights and stuff like that. Everyone keeps them. They can't make it a gift to someone or spend it somewhere. They have to keep it.
So if you wanted to basically do the types of things that you could with public domain, then you would need to use like a CC0 license. Is that a license that you guys are familiar with?
What was the question? I didn't understand the question.
So public domain in the U.S. is where it's not where you sell your copyright. It's when one of two things happens. Either you disclaim your copyright, which I think you can't do that in Germany, based on what you've just told me, or the infinite, ever expanding copyright limits. But in theory, at some point, people that have copyrights now will lose those after 75 years, and then they will go into what's called the public domain. So it's basically non-copyrighted works. But the CC0 license is something that basically says, I'm disclaiming my copyright. You can do whatever you want, basically. You don't have to attribute it to anyone. You don't have to do anything at all. There is nothing bound to that. And the reason that exists is because, like in Germany, where you can't sell your copyright, it's questionable whether you can actually put your stuff in the public domain. So you can sell your copyright, but there's some ambiguity as to whether you can give, if the copyright can be made to go non-existent. Am I clear about the distinction between those two things? So there's a copyright on the work, which can be passed around, but it's not exactly been, you know, it's not stood up in court one way or another whether or not you can just erase a copyright completely. So that's what the CC0 is for. So if you don't want to be bound for anything, you just throw that out there. But I know that people that would like to do their, to put things in public domain in countries that don't have public domain, that's something that they use. But I don't think that that's probably, I mean, I was just mostly curious because that's not a license I think you guys would be using, because obviously the artists want to be attributed for their works. But that's one thing we've talked about in the past, you know, via email and on status.net, is, you know, what licenses are best for the artists. And I think that a lot of the ones, a lot of the artists on Hipfonica use the non-commercial license. Is that right?
Right.
I think there's, is it a standard license, or do the artists pretty much get to pick?
It's kind of a standard license. There's only, if I get it right, it's only one single release which is under attribution, non-commercial, and no derivates. This is just because it is a soundtrack for a movie which was commercial, and the production didn't want to this music used for other videos or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think the rest should be completely attribution, non-commercial, share alike.
So one of the things that, you know, that I was discussing before is that, you know, that basically means that people can't, you know, if someone in the U.S. wanted to, you know, distribute copies on CDs, they couldn't do that because of the non-commercial. And I guess it's on the web. So in a sense, there's some distribution rights in that sense. But do you have distribution of CDs, or do you do CDs at all? Is it all online, electronic, MP3s, and I know you've got some OGG files as well.
Yeah, now and then we do some CDs, but mostly for promotional use. Then.
So like...
In the last time, not so much. In the beginning, we did that... yeah, for some compilations, of course.
So, how do you sell those, or how do you give them out for promotion? Are they just going out to radio stations or to local music shops? Or I mean, I've never been to Germany, so I don't know how. Over here, what would happen is that those would go to radio stations, or you know, a lot of the music shops over here will have like a free stuff bin, and then local artists, or even, you know, larger name artists that have demos, they'll have things that'll go in those boxes and people can just take them. Is that a similar system, or?
We never send any copies to music shops or whatever. We made several promotional packages just for blogs and people out there we knew, radios, non-commercial radios, whatever, and sent them, I think mostly it was DVDs with the complete catalog on, in MP3 and things like that. And that was we never sold it. We just, sent it out for promotion for people having it present.
I mean, do you sell anything, or do the artists sell things separately? How does, I guess I'm wondering how things like the domain name and the web space, how that's all paid for. Is that just out of the goodness of your heart? Or...
Yeah. Yes, we have big hearts. No, it's just, it's not that expensive, I think. Is it? We every one of us paid 50, was it 50? 50 bucks, 50?
For 3 years, for three. It's all right. Like $50 for 3 years. So if you share it by three people, that's all right for us.
Yeah. So is are the artists looking to make money, or do they have other revenue streams?
They have to.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess I'm just, is it from, you know, do they tour or do they just do local gigs or how does that, are they doing soundtracks? You mentioned a soundtrack. Is that sort of a...
I think many of the artists on Phonica are pretty, pretty diverse or pretty, I think lots of them produce their music at home privately and do normal life jobs or whatever. They are artists with, I don't know, I really can't imagine what they are. So, Tommy and Clemens, you're artists from Headphonica. What are you doing in your, what are you doing to earn money? You've got to pay the rent and things like that. You're typical artists, aren't you?
No, actually, we are students, but then we are playing some gigs, but...
they don't bring money.
Yeah, and sometimes also, producing music for commercial stuff and image movies and something.
Theater plays.
Yeah, that's that, but at the moment we are not... we don't need to... to earn the money from that, so that would be some question of the future for us. So at the moment it's quite easy going here.
Easy going? I don't think so.
And it's not okay.
No, so we get money from the state because we are learning.
Right. So it looks like there's about 60 artists on Headphonica. Are all of those active, or are there some that have sort of on hiatus or working on new projects? Or, oh, well, it looks like some of them are compilations. I see of various artists and various MySpace artists. But then it looks like there's, well, still, that's just minus two. So still 60-ish artists that are releasing.
There are a few which release on different net labels, just to name Lezzet or Ergophismus or Cone Park, Einhorgut. They released on many different net labels, from which Headphonica is only one. Other artists do only put their music out on Headphonica, for example, Mr. and Mrs. Brian, and I forgot the question. I think most of the artists are active somehow. Yes, it was about to be active, was it?
Yeah, I was just, you know, sometimes you see record labels and they have a million artists on them, but half of them are, you know, artists that, you know, from 20 years ago. But
there are a few artists, maybe it's already a lot of artists from which we only have one release, and do not really have contact to them anymore. In a few cases, we tried to contact them, and didn't get no response. So. But that doesn't matter. I think it's okay.
Yeah. The music's definitely still out there. I mean,
yes.
So what? You said you had artists in other places besides Germany. Just in general, I mean, do you see a very wide distribution across the globe of people downloading music, or is it pretty much the U.S. and Europe, or even just like Germany specific? How does that range span out?
I think I'm not sure about the actual statistics, but as I remember, it was like, so the US and Germany was like the main countries downloading and visiting. And it also happens to change that kind of US is the top downloading country and then Germany. But then there are some kind of a lot of European countries. And I also think of South America.
Eastern Europe
also. Russia. But mainly, here Tommy has the actual statistics. It's like Germany, United States, and Spain, like, sharing the top right now. And yeah.
Why do you think that is? I mean, obviously, Germany makes a lot of sense, and I would guess to some degree just the size of the U.S. Likely puts it up there. But do you think that there are genres that, you know, are bringing people from the U.S., Germany, and Spain? Or do you think that, I mean, in the U.S., the copyright situation is particularly horrendous, so people are looking for things that are free?
Yeah, I think some shares also the kind of growing net culture here in Germany, of course, and in all the more industrialized countries, but I'm not too sure how the not so developed countries are having a net culture. I don't know. Yeah. But maybe there's some point of that. I don't know. And also, I think it's a little also about the kind of music people listen here in Europe and in the US. Maybe it's more similar than to South America. I don't know. I think that from South America, for instance, we had a lot of people that are more into ambient or something.
I think so, we're getting an echo because yeah. he went to go get a beer. But that's okay. One of the things that was discussed in the email was sort of the culture of the German music scene and sort of the electronic influences that were happening in there. I don't know how far about that goes, but if you could talk a little bit about that, I think that'd be really cool.
I think in Eastern Germany there's a great experimental scene. If you talk about Leipzig, Halle, Berlin, that's much more than in the western part. So sometimes I'm getting a little bored if I'm going to Western Germany in a big town. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that it's so not so much going on there. So, but yeah, I think it's partly the low rents in Eastern Germany that are kind of good for artists being there, and so you have a lot of experimental stuff and of course artists. Yeah. At the moment, Leipzig is really going good in that direction. So everyone is going to Leipzig at the moment.
I know that there was, I guess mostly in the 90s, there was and I guess mostly in the UK as well, was a big sort of sound system culture that was sort of, I guess, kind of a radical political movement. Is this sort of an outgrowth of that, or and I don't, like I said, I don't know how much of that got on to mainland Europe, or is this just totally not at all related to that?
I don't think so. It's really just the community of artists being here that supports that, and that it just comes from, like, producing some genre, and that it just develops out of itself, but not so much from the sound system scene.
Ah, cool, cool. How long has that been going on? Is that sort of a new movement in Eastern Germany, or is that
For the last 10 years, you can say that, or maybe 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years is a pretty long time there. So this is changing the subject just a little bit, but while we're on the subject of East Germany or Eastern Germany, are all of you guys originally from the country formerly known as East Germany, or did you move over there? Or?
Born in the TDR?
I was just wondering how that was. I mean, totally not, you know, music related, but sort of, you know, I don't know how old you guys are, but just sort of that. I mean, was that a big culture shock, you know, the unification, or was it pretty seamless? I mean, I was, I think I was six when, and it, I mean, it was big news over here, and obviously it wasn't life-changing, but I'm just sort of curious about that.
Okay, that's my biography. May I? I've been 11 years old when we moved from Eastern Germany to Western Germany. Before the wall came down, that was very difficult to get out of the country, and my parents had a lot of problems here. But we moved over to Western Germany, and I saw the wall coming down from Western Germany. I was living in somewhere in Lower Saxon, and moved back to Eastern Germany when I started studying. I've been educated in Eastern Germany. I've been to school for 4 years. And I think there's still some kind of communist, socialist feeling very deep inside. a bit ironic, but I think, don't know, I think I do understand what communists think, maybe.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that sort of definitely identify with that. You know, it's kind of hard, I think, for even people that, you know, that they definitely, I mean, obviously the Creative Commons is all about sharing and all that.
That's
but
kind of a communistic movement, isn't it?
Well, somehow. Yeah, and the thing about it is, though, is that the way...
And to be honest, that's why I prefer the non-commercial license, because it deletes every commercial use. I think it's there are discussions in out there that the non-commercial license is not free. In my personal opinion, to be honest, it's much more free and provides more freedom than a Creative Commons license without non-commercial restriction.
Well, you
just
mean
for example
in the meaning of producing some kind of genre free music or kind of like being totally how do you say diverted from the commercial usage of your music. That's what you mean, Martin.
Yes, absolutely. Something that will be free for everyone, whatever happens.
Well,
no one will ever have to pay for it. That's the point.
Well, right. I mean, but I guess the thing is that if somebody, for instance, was going to put the music in a Linux distribution, they couldn't do that because Linux distributions are sold. I mean, you can buy copies, you know, offline.
No.
You can, you can get support from Canonical or from Red Hat. That sort of thing could never happen because of the non-commercial.
They should, give their distribution away for free.
Well, they do, but
yes.
There's also ways to get things. I guess what I'm saying is if someone doesn't have internet access and they wanted to get your album, you know, if there was someone who was distributing that, you know, wherever, they couldn't package that and then get it to people, I mean, at a cost. They couldn't send it through the mail, I mean, unless they were paying for that postage. And that seems unnecessary for... I mean, that seems like an unnecessary hardship for people that would like... I mean, I don't know what internet access is like in Germany, but we definitely still have people on dial-up. So downloading an album on dial-up is a painful experience. And a lot of people would rather just buy an album. But they can't buy an album because it's a non-commercial and nobody can package that for them. So I think that's sort of where that line is drawn. Or if somebody wanted to do a remix and there was Nike wanted to put that on there, they couldn't do that. Even if it was share-alike.
They can. They just have to ask. We can make an agreement, whatever. They just have to ask. What is important, we do try to tag our music well, that way that we include the email of the artist into the ID3 tag. ID3 tag. That if you're really interested, you can just have a look at the... at the metadata, and you see the email address, just contact and we make an agreement, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it.
I agree with that in principle, but don't you think that there's plenty of people that will just go to Jamendo or to wherever they get their music, and they'll look for things that are not non-commercial because they're making a movie and they don't you think that limits the amount of people that get to see your music?
No. Maybe it does, but I think we all have been around in the sphere of Creative Commons music, and we all know most of it is under non-commercial license. I don't know. Did you hear that issue they had with Canadian Broadcasting Company? That they are putting down podcasts which are licensed under Creative Commons with non-commercial music on it. They have problems with that because they don't know. Canadian Broadcasting, National Public Radio,
right.
they have problems with non-commercial music because they are putting the podcasts onto sites with pre-roll ads and things like that, and they are not sure this is okay with non-commercial. This is really, really a problem, and this limits listeners and downloaders, whatever. But I think national public radio should be non-commercial at all. They have no need to put out podcasts on sites with ads or whatever.
Well, I mean, they still have to rent space and pay for radio equipment. I don't know how it works in Canada, but here, you know, it's all there's nothing. You know, national public radio doesn't mean it's government supported. I mean, it's absolutely 100% zero government money in the U.S.
Like in Canada.
Yeah, I would imagine that theirs is somewhat similar, perhaps more progressive than here, but that tend to be pretty similar to us.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the sort of thing that you know, that is concerning, is that it is that sort of thing. But there's also sort of the freedom to find, and of course that sort of comes out more of a open source sort of mindset, you know, that where people are using it in commercial settings. Even if somebody wasn't selling their music, I mean, what about people playing it in like a Pizza Hut? I don't know what sort of a pizza parlor. I mean, they're making money off selling pizza and they're playing the music. Does that mean it's a commercial use of the music? Because in the U.S., it would be. I mean, if you show you can't show a movie to more than like three people without paying for a distribution license.
Yes, and this is a problem indeed. We already realized this maybe two or three years ago that it's a problem with the non-commercial license that DJs can't play the music on it, Fonica, in a club for a profit DJ set.
Yeah.
If you go to the Headphonica site where's about, we were telling something about the license, and we added something especially. I just read it. Furthermore, we explicitly authorized the use of all the music during for-profit DJ performances, radio broadcasts, and in online DJ mixes. We do ask that you notify us of your use for our own curiosity, and that Headphonica and the album artists are attributed and linked to where possible. If in doubt what you're allowed to do with the music, read the full license text or contact us.
Wow, that's really cool.
That's just for our own that's what we added to the non-commercial license, just to make sure it can be used for special things.
Yeah, that's right. Do you think that it would be good if there was another license that sort of distinguished? I mean, this is one thing, because I used to upload everything as non-commercial in sort of this same vein, and I always, and also just because I didn't want a company, like Exxon, that I just didn't want my materials helping them promote themselves.
I think exploitation is the main thing that musicians and artists are in fear of. The Creative Commons licenses, I think, can be much more diverse. There could be, I think it's six types of license. And
there's
in
six
my opinion,
main ones. There's the sampling plus license as well, which is
okay.
Not
in my opinion, it could be maybe 20.
Yeah.
20 different licenses would be no problem, I think.
I mean, this is a huge debate, so I don't want to, you know, come off as being pushy about it. I just think it's something that people are interested in, and I'm particularly interested in the ways in which it's different, different places. I mean, from talking with Dan Lynch over in the UK and talking to you guys, it sounds like things are really similar. I mean, there are definitely some differences, but it sounds like things are really similar, which seems kind of odd to me that things are so legal systems that have had, you know, so many hundreds of years of disparate things going on in this particular instance seem to be fairly similar.
Maybe I can explain it from another point of view. A few times we contacted artists and asked them. We just contacted them via MySpace or whatever, and contacted them and asked if we can bring out their music. It's not the thing. Usually labels get demos and decide whether to bring it out or not. Right. And sometimes we just do it the other way around and seek for good music, you know.
Right.
And it's much more easy to convince musicians, musicians that make beautiful music. It's much more easy to convince them to release their music for free if it's non-commercial.
Yeah,
if it has
absolutely.
This non-commercial license. And I think it's very hard to explain to them how this should be able just a attribution and share alike.
Oh, I totally understand that. I know Tom has sort of been fighting that battle, especially with people that aren't familiar with Creative Commons, and he sort of has a script, you know, because people do have the immediate response, you know, like, hey, you know, I don't want to be exploited. And last time, I'd have to look, but last time Tom and I talked about, and that show hasn't been released, but a flow chart of questions.
I think the exploitation argument, we shouldn't laugh about that. At times when music still is sold over the internet, over shops and online stores and platforms, whatever, as long as music is being sold, I think there's the possibility for exploitation. And that's what musicians fear when they look back at the music industry of the last 20, 40, 50 years, because they have been exploited in those times. And they just don't want it anymore.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know, that's if you ask a musician who makes a contract with a major label, what he does get for the music sold on CDs or whatever, that's ridiculous. You know, that's really hard business. They are exploited. And I think it's very nice for them to be free to not have any fear to be exploited.
I guess I'm not suggesting that exploitation isn't something that people should be concerned with. It's just that since people don't understand the Creative Commons, you know, he'll ask the question, "Well, do you care if your music is given out for free?" And they're like, "Well, no, that's fine." And so Tom's like, "Well, you know, putting it out with all rights reserved is not really that much different than giving it out for a no derivatives license. I mean, that just means that other people can distribute it. You know, it's like, do you care if people give their friends the album? You know, no. Then they can put it under the non derivatives. They're like, do you care if people do remixes? And they're like, no, that's cool. And then, you know, they're like, well, then you don't need the non-derivatives, you know. And so, you know, that takes some time to sort of do that discussion. And but I think Tom has had some success. And I don't know if he's gotten people not to do the non-commercial. I know it took him some time to convince his band, Lorenzo's Music, to not use the non-commercial. But eventually, the thing with him is that they've sold, I don't know how many more albums, but they have just done a ton more albums since they put their stuff out under Creative Commons. You know, and people will say, you know, how much does your album, you know, how much do people normally give? And Tom's just like, you don't have to pay me, you know, like, you can just take it. It's not a big deal, you know, just to like people he knows. And he's like, no, you know, what do people normally pay you? And, you know, then he'll just make up a number, because I guess he doesn't know. Maybe he knows, but he just hasn't looked at the data. But
one of the main examples is the Nine Inch Nails and their release of was it Ghosts or what? They sold, what was it, 2,500 copies of a extra deluxe version of this album with a DVD, CD, and vinyls and a book included, and this costs
$300 or something.
$300, yeah. And calculate 2,500 with $300, and you know what they made with a record sold under attribution, non-commercial, share alike. Everybody can remix it and put online his remix, or offline is difficult, put online his remix as long as it's non-commercial.
Right.
I think, what else do you want? It's that's just a good business model. And I think what would have happened if they have put it out without this non-commercial restriction? I think there would be floating around lots of copies, and people would press their own vinyl and sell it, and I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely. So what do you think that, you know, people that see the success of Nine Inch Nails within they're still hesitant to do the Creative Commons. Do you think that it's just they still don't understand it's just a label on this album that doesn't mean anything to them? Or do you think that they just see giving their music out for free as being the same thing? Or is it because they're on major labels and they're just not thinking about it? I mean, there's two separate things. I mean, there's the sort of you know, artist that does it for the love of music, and then there's, you know, the type of person that would like to be on a major label or is on a major label, which are, probably not often the same type of person.
But the opposite is the Radiohead version. They gave their album for free, or pay what you want, and nobody paid them. A lot of people paid a lot of money, but all rights are reserved. And that's just, I'm not sure if folks out there really do care about copyrights. I don't know. There are many people buying stuff at iTunes or whatever. I think there are also very many people just downloading what they want. What is no problem nowadays. You just type it into the search engine and add some torrent or BitTorrent, and you get everything you want. I don't know. I really don't know if people out there care about copyrights.
Even if they don't care about copyright, you don't think that they're concerned about the powers that be coming down on them, as far as do you think it's just too much that they can't catch people? Or I know that, like, my brother got like a cease and desist order for downloading things. So it does happen. So
okay. I'm not doing this. I have not done this very often, and I think I don't know how widespread it is. I don't know, but it must have been masses years ago. When there was nothing like iTunes.
Yeah, and then for a long time, some bands at least fought against iTunes, and I don't even know if like Metallica and the Beatles have even gotten on iTunes. I mean, iTunes doesn't run on Linux, so I don't really know anything about iTunes other than it's Apple products.
Tommy, Clemens, do you have anything to say about iTunes? Does it work?
Is Metallica on there?
can you play Metallica on a Mac?
Just sort of talk a little bit about some of your favorite bands and artists, either Creative Commons or otherwise, just so people can get a sense of what sorts of things they might find when they go to Headphonica to download.
Yeah, I'm currently doing an interview with Tidy Kit. He has released like 2 or 3 EPs on Creative Commons licenses also. And now in the next weeks, he's releasing his first vinyl 7-inch single with a Bibio remix on the B-side. And
oh,
it's
nice.
Kind of, it's really nice music. And he's into, I don't know, having samples from just some tin cans and just using that for the whole EP or something. So he's like having conceptual EPs and trying to develop his sound from those experiments. And I think he's quite serious in this way of making music, and he's an interesting interview partner. Yeah, well, let's see where he's going in the next time.
Anybody else?
Yeah, there's lots of nice music also on the Creative Commons licenses.
We're still searching for handmade Finnish folk music. traditional Finnish folk music, but we have not found an artist yet. We'd also like to, I think we'd also like to release some theremin version of Bach's Brandenburgische Konzerte, things like that. It should be unique or original in its own ways.
So why Finnish folk? Why not German folk?
German folk would might be of interest too, but we are not that much into German folk. Had we? I don't know. Was Jan Grünfeld? Jan Grünfeld was kind of just a bit like German folk, I don't know. He's also singing English. but he's German, and
it's a German doing folk music, so that's German
yes,
folk,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, it's somehow it's German folk. In the early days, I tried to convince someone from Mongolia who's making traditional Mongolian music, but that was contact about contact via MySpace, but this account was shut down and never contacted him anymore, which is very sad.
Yeah.
I think there's interesting music everywhere.
Cool.
It could be from it would be very interesting to have traditional music from China or let's say some classical music from Namibia, maybe, or classical artists from Namibia would be interesting too, if there are some.
Unfortunately, most of our listeners are in the U.S. and the U.K., so, but maybe we'll get, I know we've got one listener from Puerto Rico, so maybe he can, maybe he's got some contacts to,
that
for
would
some
be
Puerto
interesting.
Rican
traditional music from Puerto Rico would be interesting, definitely.
Yeah. So he lives in New Orleans now, so I don't know if you've got any blues or any jazz. He might be able to throw some jazz artists your way. I am of Swedish heritage, mostly English, but also Swedish in my family. And so I get into the whole Scandinavian thing sometimes. So are you looking for Humppa particularly, or other Finnish folk music? That's sort of the main sort of Finnish music that I'm, other than like metal. Humppa is the main Finnish music that I know about.
Humppa is fun, it's okay, but it's not traditional.
No,
is
it's
it?
Not. I don't know. I just know that it's like a Finnish. It's like
I think
a
music
polka.
From Yeah, polka is cool, and polka is something really nice, but I think if music comes from Finland, it should be traditional, as traditional as possible. I don't know, they have to wear clothes from animal leather and maybe sunglasses, I don't know. You know.
Apparently Humppa was arrived in Finland in 1913.
1913, okay.
That's what it says, yeah.
That's very traditional then. We should think about that.
It's like
maybe Humppa is the new
quasi-traditional, I would say, but
okay. Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of cool. Apparently, yeah, like it's pretty fast stuff. There's this band, Fintroll, that they're like a black metal band. They're like black metal Humppa, so that's like my main sort of entry. And they're like a folk, you know, the folk metal genre. So that's why I associated Humppa with folk music, but yeah, I guess it's not really traditional folk music, which is unfortunate. But
very
it's still
unfortunate.
It's still awesome. So
absolutely.
Cool. So I think we've heard from two of you guys about the music. Do you guys have a SoundCloud account or know anything about?
Yes.
Cool. So
yes, I think we have.
I think everywhere that I found you guys that I've friended you, but I can't keep track of every place that is. So what sorts of stuff do you have on SoundCloud since we're talking about it? I mean, you're hosting everything on the website. Is there just the same sort of stuff on there, or is it particular selections, or?
It's mostly samples for remixing. I think we haven't had we had music on there, had we?
I don't think so. We had the podcast or something.
Yes.
Some kind of compilation in one track some months ago. But yeah, right now it's the remix samples for the Faust recycled compilation.
I think they're still
online. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
You could add remixes.
Okay. we are not releasing music with SoundCloud. It's just playing around with it, I think. we have a Dropbox there too, and it was free. I don't know when we registered there. It must be two or three years ago, and two or three weeks ago, I just asked Clemens, where do we find, where is this Dropbox? Has anyone dropped any music at all? And there has been music in it. Really old music, but there has been music in there. Yes,
cool.
So strange music. Really strange music.
Well, it sounds like that's what you like, though. To a certain extent, you like the experimental.
Yes, absolutely. Music, so. Experimenting in as many ways as possible.
So I asked about the music, but either artists or just personalities in general. I mean, is there anybody that we should seek out that to get on the show? Anybody particularly opinionated that you think Tom and I, as well as the listeners, would be interested in what they have to say about things? Or are you guys pretty much the canonical voice on Creative Commons music?
I think there are lots of people you could contact, especially if you want to a good overview about the German and European CC movement. You should contact Moritz Sauer from Flow Magazine. I will send you the email. Okay. What I think would be really interesting would be if you contact Jason from the Free Music Archive, which I think is someone who really has to say a lot of about free music and things like that. Well, there are many.
Yeah, there is some other thing I think that might be interesting too. If you go over to the Open Music Contest, and there's some group that is discussing some Creative Commons collecting society, like
this is very interesting indeed.
This is kind of the like
ASCAP.
For Creative Commons.
Hopefully they're not as big a dicks as ASCAP is. I don't know. Again, if all of you have heard the shows where I think there's been two different shows where we've talked about douchey things that ASCAP has done, but I'm going to assume that they're nice people, though, despite the terrible comparison.
Oh, and we were contacted by these guys from Prima FM, Volker Tripp, and that is, they're involved in Net Audio Berlin and things like that. They are trying some very interesting thing. I think they are trying to sell the non-commercial music to small companies for radio and stuff like that.
That's what Jimendo does.
Exactly, but they're trying to do that with artists which are not on Jamendo and things like that. They're also trying that. I think I don't know what which progress they made, how things are going at Prima FM, but the concept is really interesting, I think.
And that was Prima, P-R-I-M-A?
PRIMA.FM.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely have to check that out. So this is just sort of another one of those I'm curious sorts of questions. But you've got the account on StatusNet, or probably on Identica. I'm just wondering what brought you to Identica. Was it just the emphasis on freedom? It's always sort of interesting to see both the disconnects and the similarities between free software and free culture, because there's a lot of people interested in free culture that don't really know much or care much about free software, and vice versa. So, whereas to me, they seem like they should be, and to a certain extent are, very aligned.
actually, it's only me, Martin, who's managing this Identica profile, and this was created almost a year ago. So, by the time a year ago, and it was also that we had already been registered at Twitter. Thingsbums, Twitter mania things, and Identica was just a kind of finding, and I saw this Creative Commons license, which Identica is licensed to, and thought that might be interesting. At that time, I had already tried and experimented with Linux on my old computer. In the meantime, I'm completely on a free operating system, absolutely freedom. Yes, it's Identica is different to the community on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
There the most people we are followed or following at Twitter has something to do with Net Audio or CC Music or things like that. It's kind of a community of that we are following at Twitter, and the Identica account, there are this much more diversity. There are many interesting people, mostly denting about open source and open software and interesting stuff like that.
Cool.
But it's, I think there's a missing link between those spheres. I think it's very interesting that the Net Audio community, all the net labels and stuff like that, in general, that's a generalization somehow, are not really interested in free software, and that all the neckbeards or the geeks are not really interested in free music. or let's say Creative Commons music. If you do you know LibreFM?
Yeah, definitely.
That's very interesting. LibreFM is a open source alternative to Last.fm, and they have an option to see the latest played music. If you go to Google and make Libre.fm and Turtle, you see the last tracks that have been played on LibreFM, and you see Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I just did it. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Black Sabbath, The Exploited, Voivod, The Eagles, Frank Sinatra. This is just not free music, I think. Mike Watt, Joy Division, Bruce Springsteen. That's if you have a look at turtle.libre.fm, you know what Linux folk listen to. And it's very few free music, I think. There's more free music on Last.fm. it's just my own account that's full of free music. Others maybe not. I don't know.
Some of these, though, I don't know. This looks like it might actually be German, or somebody that just likes to not spell things in English. Elektronisch Geist, something, ELE. I mean, I'm seeing that on the turtle.libre.fm. I guess you could probably see that too if you went there. Heideki Kaji. I mean, those aren't names that I recognize. So, I mean, it seems like there's a bit of a mix. Some of these maybe are ones that I just don't know anything about. I don't understand the. I just haven't.
Yes. But I think there should be it should be full of Creative Commons music, and it isn't.
Well, they do have the only music that they'll play, like if you stream from LibreFM.
I know. I just tried to find out how to upload music there, but I got no response from Matt, the guy who managed that.
You guys can't. Because you're not using a free license. So I think that's actually the thing that LibreFM and their sort of very strict adherence to, how they define freedom with not using the non-commercial. That's what brought Tom and his band to stop using the non-commercial, because they realized that they were limiting the ways in which their music could be propagated. They're very pretty hardcore about that, so maybe that was it. I have one more question, and that's just to ask if there's anything else that you guys want to say or promote or ask me questions. Now is your chance to promote whatever you want to promote, so have at it.
promotion, promotion. Where's my now,
a couple of where? You guys are producing music, so do you have do you do any sort of live things? Like I said, I don't know how many German listeners that we have, but where can people check you out? Is it just all online?
No, we play concerts now and then. Here and there. I think we play in Jena next time. That's not, that's a bit far for the Americans, but.
yeah. Well, we have listeners in Europe. That much we do know. I just don't know how many in Germany.
So mainly we play here in Eastern Germany.
Where can people find information about that? Is it just on the artist pages on Headphonica, or is there another place for people to go look for that?
Yeah, usually people get the contact on Facebook I'm not responsible for that.
So does Headphonica have a Facebook page here? Search.
Yeah,
oh, there we go. I didn't like you guys, so I just went ahead and liked you. I pretty much hated you until this interview. I decided that I like you. So there we go.
Let's be that honest. In the statistics, this month we have October is this month. The most clicks on Headphonica, as our statistics say, came from Facebook. Zuckerbergbook. The most of the clicks came from Mark Zicker Facebook Berg Clark.
Yeah,
that's it. Really annoying. Really annoying. But however, that's how it is.
A lot of people feel that way. Yeah, that Facebook is sort of a necessary evil, but. I mean, we have our page up there. You guys should like us as well.
Do one have to register there to like or dislike something? Is it?
Yeah. Do they have a? I don't think there's a dislike. That would be awesome if there was a dislike.
It would be important to have a dislike, isn't it?
I think it's sort of disliked by.
Are that only happy people there? They're all glad and happy and singing along with these Facebook hippies.
They only like things. Everybody that doesn't you dislikes you. It's very black and white. In that sort of sense.
That's so, simple like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We only have 17 people that like
us. I start to understand this Facebooking Zuckerberg thing. Okay. I like. Okay. I noticed, I wrote down to my notes that I have to check out this Facebook. Facebook. Yes. Don't know how it works. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm out of questions, and it sounds like you guys are out of things as well. it's been fantastic.
Thanks to the guys at Headphonica, Martin, Tommy, and Clemens, for doing the interview. Once again, sorry that I couldn't be there. So this has been The Music Manumit, and we'll talk to you next time at musicmanumit.com.